All right. Good morning, everybody. Let's get this started. So today, we are basically trying to cover the Windows Server 2016 investments in the space of DDI, DNS, DHCP, and IPAM. I'm Mahesh Narayanan. I'm a PM in Cloud and Enterprise Division. Work on some of the Windows Server technologies as well as System Center, even some solutions on the OMS side. And I have my friend and peer, you know, from ThreadStop, as well as we're expecting somebody from SPAR, Thomas from SPAR, to co-speak this session with some of the improvisation, some of the scenarios that has been tackled, and even the experiences what they have with the Windows Server DDI space. Tom, want to have a brief intro?
Yeah, hi. I'm Tom Burns. I'm the CEO of ThreadStop. We invented the concept of DNS firewalls and using DNS to disseminate network security policy. Some of you may actually already be customers of ours. InfoBlox has been OEMing our product for the past 4 years. Was launched at RSA 2013. And we have, working with Microsoft, with these great facilities that they've put into Windows Server 2016, making it a really powerful DDI platform, now brought the capabilities that used to exist only in these so-called enterprise DDI platforms into Microsoft, so it's available in Windows Server 2016 to everybody.
Yep. Thanks, Tom. All right, so just to iterate on the set of sessions, we'll start a quick brief around the 2016 investment in IP address management. We'll look at some of the DNS server management that's enabled in IPAM, and some of the cool features in the DNS server as well. And then I'll be handing off to Tom. So Tom would be covering some of the ThreadStop investments on top of the DNS server. Right. So this is a recap. Just want to check how many of you have tried the technical preview of the Windows Server with regard to DDI? Okay, cool. So this slide is a recap of what IP address management is all about. And also there are some color code, which may not be that visible. Those in the yellow text indicate those are the investment what we have done this time around for 2016, right? So IP address management, we had started our investment in Windows Server 2012. We started with trying to solve a problem for enterprise environment who try to deal the IP address-based management with spreadsheets. And there were minimal support of a DHCP server management at that point in time. 2012 R2, we strengthened the IP address management capability to support DHCP management to its entirety, including the DHCP failover, which we had released. And also the IP address management, especially in the space of a virtual IP address. So we had the VMM integration with the Windows Server 2016 IPAM, by the virtue of which we could have the physical as well as the virtual IP address managed from a single console, right? And we had a roaring kind of a customer feedback on that feature, because it was really enabling them to capacity plan their IP address when it comes to physical and virtual IP address, because that mapping is crucial to give to make a lot of policies, basically, from an allocation and other perspective. What we have done in that unified IP address management in 2016, while we had, by 2012 R2, when we had the unified IP address management for both the physical and virtual, this time around we have tried to tie that with the DNS and DHCP parameters as well. So now when you look at an IP address in the IP address space management, you get a clear sense of what are the DNS records pertaining to that particular IP address. So you have a complete context when you're looking at an IP address in IPAM 2016. And I'll walk you through some of those experience in a form of a demo. Network services management, primarily the DNS and DHCP here, is pretty much an integral part of the IPAM solution. And we started with DHCP in 2012 R2, and we have, in 2016, we have kind of embraced the DNS management to its fullness, I would say. And there are granular level of DNS configuration that's possible out of the IPAM, especially in a case of a multi-management scenarios in the DNS, when you're looking at zones of powered by the same set of servers and stuff. So those kind of configurations can be really handled much more smooth and better. There's a lot of experience tied in with role-based access control as well, because that's been one of the top asks from the customers wherein, any of these management require an adequate role-based access control. So that as well we have tried to take care in 2016. The partial support, there were certain gaps in the partial support from the point of view of we basically covered only those scenarios which had a kind of a UI representation. So from a parity point of view, we had the partial in parity with what we had in UI. There were scenarios where there were automation scenarios where customers really wanted to get insight about identifying a free IP subnet out of a fragmented IP block, right? You kind of customers would like to just go and share a size of the subnet, and they would like to get in a fragmented IP address block the possibility of various different subnets that can be allocated. Similar kind of automations, partial was required. So this time around in 2016, we have tried to address that as well. Scale and robustness automation. So most of the environment, at least the Active Directory-based environment, seems to be with multiple AD forest in play, right? Until the 2012 R2 of IPAM had supported only the DNS and DHCP and IP address space management of a single forest. And 2016, we have opened it up. We have now, we'll be able to manage the IP address, DNS, and DHCP of multiple AD forest. Network audit and visibility is an integral part of the scheme of IP address management, like how the network services management is. And we, at this point in time, we have kind of building the building blocks for this. We foresee a lot of scenarios getting, enabled in this particular space because audit, is very essential when it comes to the basic network parameters like your IP address and domain names, and to track the activity on the network. I'm pretty sure Tom would be having a lot of scenarios around it, and our intent is to enable the fundamentals, build a platform so that ThreatStop can really go and build cool solutions on top of it for the customers.
It's really cool what they've enabled. I mean, this is the first stage of what you can start to do.
Yep.
And they've got some really great, they took some of the ideas that exist in Bind and they've improved on
yep.
them, really.
Yep.
So you're going to start seeing more and more cool stuff coming down the pipe.
Righty. Yep. All right, so this is just to capture the, the typical topology, deployment topology of an, IPAM, right? So the IPAM server, as I mentioned earlier, offers a unified IP address space management for both the physical and virtual, integrated DDI management, wherein we are trying to have the IP address, the domain name, the DHCP scope, the DHCP dynamic IP address, the static IP address, the IPv4, the IPv6, the public, the private address, all of these different, vectors in this particular space to be managed in a holistic manner out of the IPAM. So that's the integrated DDI management, which we believe is really going to help you out with a lot of the scenarios that you have. RBAC is essential. Every environment has multi-tier admins with clear delegation of roles and responsibilities, and we have really gone very deep with regard to the granularity of having the role-based access control. I'll walk you through some of those in the demo just to express the kind of a granularity. The granularity goes to just to give a hint, it goes to a level of DNS resource record and what you can do on top of that particular DNS resource record. Network and audit and visibility, as I mentioned, so we track the IP address activity, the host activity, the username, and the device activity on the network. So this is basically built based on tapping into the data from the DNS, DHCP, Active Directory, and even NPS, because NPS being the AAA server, there's a lot of authorization-related information there. So we kind of tap into that and provide a neat experience on basically different vectors to get a sense of network audit and visibility. So in 2016, the deployment topology has extended, right? As I mentioned, now it's multi-forest support. So the single instance of an IPAM server running in a domain of a forest would be able to manage the DNS, DHCP, and IP address properties that's there in a totally different AD forest. What is required is, of course, these two AD forests needs to be with two-way trust, and we are not automating that out of the IPAM, but then that's an experience, or that's a kind of a setup which we typically expect the environment to have in place. a brief walkthrough of DNS management enhancements, because this has been one of the significant investment this time in 2016. So we have DNS management to its completeness for all the Windows Server versions of the DNS servers. We also have a plan to have opening it up for third-party DNS, not at the 2016 release, but then we are foreseeing that. There are a lot of customer demand for it. So what we have in 2016 is a great DNS data collection, which taps into DNS zone information, resource record information, the domain joined, Microsoft DNS server information. And we really try to optimize the collection in a way wherein it is not really going to tax the IPAM server or even the DNS servers, right? Because most of these DNS information is replicated, and it's there's a lot of redundancy, if I may, when you're trying to pull into the IPAM server. And the deduplication is something which we really didn't want to tie in into the IPAM server and make it a lot more process intensive and heavy. Instead, what we really thought is that every environment would be having a designated DNS server where you expect to have all of the DNS resource record and the other information. So we basically collect only from those DNS servers. So there's a configuration experience for an administrator who has an idea of in his environment, which is a DNS server that we need to be real tap into for that information. So we there could be certain automations in this particular area to identify the DNS server depending on traffic, and the kind of a registration that would be happening. We do not have it at this point in time, but then we definitely foresee that, those automation is something which we want to bring in so that it's a lot more easier to identify a DNS server from which data can be obtained. There's a new collection task so that you can, basically introducing a knob so that you can control the kind of a traffic that is moving to the IPAM server or handle the scheduler of, collection, because IPAM is in the Windows Server IPAM is an agentless architecture. We pretty much rely on the data and information logged in this DNS and DHCP servers, and it's a collection base. So we periodically collect, and there are different periodicity in which we collect the data from DNS, DHCP, VMM, or even the AD and NPS, right? And so it's very essential that that scheduler, the task scheduler, needs to be controlled, and there needs to be a knob for, it can be tuned for basically environment to environment. Currently, we have a default periodic collection of 6 hours, wherein we collect all the DNS information, the 3 blocks which I just mentioned over the DNS zones, resource records from the DNS servers, that we collect in around like 6 hours periodicity. And what do we have on top of that? So we have an auto population of IP address inventory. Most of the environment would be having DNS to be their authoritative entity to have the IP address and the name records, right? And this is, instead of doing a network sweep kind of a scenario, we are trying to tap into the DNS server and create the IP address record automatically so that the IP address inventory is getting built and stuff. So one of the mechanism that's applied here. The DNS management of resource records and zones, and then actually multi-management of DNS records and zones, that's the key part of it, and that's where we really see a lot of value prop. And by the virtue of having this IPAM, there is, we foresee a kind of users not logging into the MMC of the DNS. We strongly feel that the IPAM would be the single console where users would be able to go use it. And in fact, with the role-based access control, then things are a lot more controlled as well, right? Integrated IP addressing, DNS and DHCP management, that's an offering coming in 2016. You'll see a lot of these information across the plane. If you look, when I show the IPAM through the demo, you'll clearly see that there are different pivots where you get to see IP address space management, where you get to do the virtual IP address management, DNS management, DHCP management and stuff. So those pivots are not going to be in silos. All the data and information, you'll really see them playing across in a purposeful manner, really not really kind of duplicating and having an overwhelmed kind of a view, but then we're trying to really look at scenario-centric representation of this particular data there. Audit of DNS configuration changes, something which customers have been asking all along. If IPAM is going to be used as a management entity to control the DNS servers or manage the DNS server, then all those in the configuration changes would be audited by the IPAM. On top of this is, you know, all of this control can be, you know, achieved with a granular role-based access control. All righty, so this is the partial enhancements, which I was just mentioning. We have the RBAC control as well enabled in the partial. Because there is a lot of, you know, a large number of objects, it could be the DNS, DHCP, or the IP address object, it's essential to have the role-based access control leveraged for the automation of these particular objects, because from a role-based access control point of view, there would be one-time definition of a role and, you know, the permissions and you know, the users to which this, you know, role has been associated with or designated to, right? And but then once that is done, then we need to have that access scope kind of tied with each of the objects. And if you're looking at DNS zones in thousands, if you're looking at DHCP scopes in thousands, and if you're looking at IP address obviously in millions, right, it becomes essential to have things automated to associate that access scope with these entities. And that's something, that's the reason why we have partial commandlets enabled this time around. And there had been a lot of feedback about this ask in 2012 R2, and we have tried to enable this time for 2016. All right, so what I'll do is I'll switch to my demo station and walk you through some of the IPAM investments, try to touch upon various different areas of investment, what is done there, and I'm going to be watchful of the time as well. Yeah. All right, so this is the IPAM console. IPAM is an integral part of the server manager and the Windows server, right? So if you look at the server manager, there are a bunch of experiences there that one can do with different roles and configuration of those particular roles. IPAM is a feature in the Windows Server 2016, and it has its own tile, which gives you a perspective of the availability of that particular feature in conjunction to all the other, you know, roles and features that has been managed by this instance of a server manager, right? User can get a clear sense of the manageability, health, the events, and the performance metrics of that particular feature, you know, out of the server manager. And clicking on the IPAM, it takes you a landing page of the IP address management, which is basically an overview section, which if the IPAM is not installed here, there's a very guided experience with regard to the setup of IPAM, right? And the setup of IPAM is involved because, you know, all the DNS and DHCP needs to be configured for it to be actually working with the IPAM instance, and especially because it's agentless, there are some of the configurations which needs to be happening on the DNS and DHCP with regard to getting an access to the data and permission of those, you know, access to the data and stuff. And you know, so the provision of the IPAM server, again, we have two modes. One is the manual provision mode, which is all about a very documentation-driven approach. Another is an automated provisioning approach, wherein we leverage GPO provisioning, because we all look and, you know, we have this IPAM server work in the Active Directory, you know, domain and stuff. While I state that, if there are instances of entities which is not part of the Active Directory and then which we need to still have them managed, then that can be added, those servers can be added, and then, you know, we can still continue to manage as any other domain joined machines. We have a server discovery, which clearly is going to give you a perspective of a server inventory, you know, which gives you a list of DNS and DHCP servers in an Active Directory domain or, you know, multiple Active Directory forest, right? And it gives you a perspective of the health and data access, you know, from the IPAM point of view. There could be cases wherein if you have some of the GPU provisioning not happen, then you might not be able to get the data, but then this is a view where you actually go and have those things get a perspective about it and then troubleshoot it, right? So folks who had tried with the 2012 R2 instance of an IPAM would know that when you do a configure server discovery, we used to get only one Active Directory forest, which it would have learned by the virtue of which were the IPAM servers running. And this time around, you can see that there are multiple Active Directory forests which it can pick. And how this has been achieved is the IPAM server, when it is running in a specific domain of an Active Directory forest, it is also aware about the other entities like the DNS and DHCP in a different Active Directory forest that is having an interaction with this Active Directory forest. And thereby, it is able to discover that, hey, there are these other forests that seems to be having a kind of a control from this Active Directory domain. Get a clear sense of what do you want to manage out of here. Would you want to get all the DNS information, DHCP servers, and domain controller? You can set those discovery process. And once it is fired, then it's going to start populating that inventory with all the servers. So this is the pane where you get to see that the IPAM server is running in the contoso.com, and the managed domains are contoso.com and the fabricam.com. Both of these are different Active Directory forest. Since I mentioned that it's a kind of a collection-based IPAM server, which relies on the IPAM server pulling a lot of this information, or basically the different tasks which is running on the IPAM server, which is gathering the various different DNS and DHCP information. You get to see all the scheduled tasks out of this window here. All right, so in this case, since we just spoke about the 2016 having cross AD forest support, you're able to see here there are two DCs that's running in different forests that has been discovered, and we are able to have things managed, and we are able to get the data from those domain controllers. If we had the DNS and DHCP in those Active Directory forests, we would get to see all of them over here. Right, so let me go one by one. So one of the features which didn't exist in the 2012 R2 was about tying together the IP address and the DNS information, right? And here I can show you how things have changed in the 2016 version of an IPAM. So I'm clicking here into the private IP address space, looking at a block, getting to an IP address range. I'm seeing a list of IP address records belonging to that particular IP address range. And here, as part of the IP address's configuration details and the event catalog, basically, which captures all the configurations that happen on this particular IP address, who made that configuration, when the configuration was made, what was the old value, what is the new value, all of that can be literally viewed on a single click of a record. This is a new thing which is added, the DNS resource records. Now you can look at that. When you are doing the IP address space management, you get to see all the DNS related information as well in that particular view, right? And gives you a clear sense of whether there is anything that needs to be tackled with regard to the DNS resource record management from here, or even trying to get a sense of while you're trying to manage the Uber entity, which is this IP address record, you get a context of the impact of any configuration changes that you do over here, right? So quickly jumping into, so these are the different pivots that I was mentioning, the IP address space. This pivot is all about managing the IP address record. This is all about the virtual IP address space records. Say, for instance, you have a virtual machine manager deployed in an environment. We tap into all the the physical and the private and the virtual IP address and show a kind of a how they are associated with each other. And monitor and manage is all about the DNS and DHCP management. So we have it against different vectors. We do it in case of a DHCP, we have it at a server level, scope level, and even the IP address level. And if you look at the DNS, we have it with at the DNS server level, the DNS zones level, and the resource record level. There are other new investment that has happened in 2016 in the DNS server, for example, DNS policies, which I'll cover. That is still to be enabled out of the IP address management, but then we'll be working on it. We'll see that coming in soon, probably in the next UR or the next release. So here in this view, user can filter out into specific whether he wants to have only the DNS or a DHCP, and then can get a clue of the complete property of that. So here, this is a set access scope wherein I was mentioning with the granular role-based access control that you associate. I'll walk through a separate workflow on how the granular RBAC can be configured. So let's look at the DNS zones record, right? So here, the users can clearly see the classification of a forward lookup zones and the reverse lookup zone. And obviously, the reverse lookup zone would be having the IPv4 and IPv6 categories, and then there is a conditional forwarder. So as user can see here, there are all these different DNS zones which can be managed out of a single pane. And if you have multiple DNS zones which needs to be managed, select multiple of them, create the edit DNS zone, we clearly understand what are those parameters which can be multi-edited on multiple instances of a DNS servers. We have an intelligence of that built into the system, and user can go and make those configuration changes. So which is definitely not possible in the MMC kind of an approach where user has to go per DNS zone or rely completely on the partial automation to have things done. But then here, you make any configuration changes, you get to see the configuration getting applied, and the summary of it can be viewed as well in the same wizard. So in this case of DNS server, the parameters that can be modified is about the zone, the dynamic update configuration, the zone aging and scavenging properties, the server records, and then the zone transfers, with regard to allow zone transfers and where. So user can similarly, go into the hierarchy of the zone, clearly get a sense of other distinct zones where resource records are lying, and then have a similar kind of experience with regard to the managing those resource records as well as multi-manage those particular resource records. Again, we, depending on the resource records or the type of the resource record, we can have the multi-management support, which clearly gives you a sense of what are the net set of parameters that can be modified. In this case, of resource record, what is possible is only the TTL value. The others, the other parameters or the properties are pretty much specific to those resource record. Hence, there's no multi-management capability for those. So as you can see here, there is this configuration. I need to go to the zones view once again. So this is a collection which I was trying to explain. So if you want to have these particular zones to be obtained from a specific DNS server, so you can say that, hey, this is the preferred DNS server from where I would like to get the zone information collected. So this would fetch all the zones as well as the resource record from that preferred DNS server. And this can be customized to various different zones because each of the zones would be housed in different or hosted out of different DNS servers. All right, so let me walk through some of the access control experience. So just to show the granularity of role-based access control that is built into the IPAM system. So if user is going to click and add user role, these are the set of operations that user can perform. And if you look at the DNS resource record, these are the server-level operations which user can perform. Then similarly, there are DNS resource record management operations from the point of each of the distinct resource record, right? And if you take into the double click into each of the resource record, then you have the create, delete, modify kind of operations as well possible out of here. Similarly, there are IP address and DNS zone related configuration, DHCP reservations, or the DHCP scope. It can go as granular as it can get. Once you have the user role configured, then what we do is access scope. So access scope is subjective to each of the IT environments requirement. There would be different pivots against which access scope needs to be configured. It could be based on the division, it could be based on the geo region, or even the admin groups. And so user can go and create all those different access scope hierarchy. Once you have the access scope hierarchy created, for example over here, I can say that based on offices. Right. So user can just go create these kind of different access scope. And then when it comes to the access policy, this is where things get tied together. The access policy is where you tie in the users who need to be having certain permissions, right, on those particular access scopes. So once you have the user selected over here, which is from a domain which it would recognize the users, user can go and clearly say which role, which is basically the one which you had configured earlier. And for example, here you go. So this is a role which we wanted to have, say DNS zone administration, and you wanted this to be allocated only to the East US. Add a setting to it. And once you have the user associated with that, this could be a single user or a group of users, then the access is set for those as a policy. It has been configured. Then what user the admin needs to do is that go to the DNS zones view and then select bunch of the DNS zones and then set access scope. When you do the set access scope, you can just point to the East US. And that's how the complete user, the permission, and the access scope, which is about specific region or different vectors which customers have, depending on their IT requirement, can be associated. And once this is in play, when those users try to log into the IPAM server, then they would get a control on only those entities on which this access scope is set, and for those objects which is configured as part of this access policy. So that's a brief walkthrough of NetSet of capabilities in the 2016 enhancements, what we had done. Moving back to here, fortunately, I do not have a colleague of from SPAR to represent some of their investments that they had in 2016, but looks like Tom has some information on it.
I hope Thomas is doing well. It was a rough day for traffic this morning, and lots of people were coming in as we started, so hopefully he's all right. We did actually spend some time yesterday evening in the speaker ready room going over his presentation, so I do have some understanding of what they're doing. SPAR is a very large retailer. If any of you are from Europe or have lived in Europe, you will know that pretty much every town, no matter where, has a SPAR. They have owned entities and they have franchised entities. They have the retail stores that are SPAR branded, and they have sports authority type things. They're everywhere. And that's a pretty big footprint with lots and lots of different stores where they have critical assets to protect, and doing truck rolls and endpoint protection for those types of systems is actually pretty hard. They had been a mixed Windows Active Directory and Infoblox environment for managing their DDI, and they had to make a choice to go all the way one way or the other. And given the cost, and also two vendors makes it really hard sometimes to figure out who's to blame, they decided that they were going to go with Microsoft. And why? Well, because they have a pretty large size problem. I mean, that's a big distributed network with a lot of different things. And they have two forests that they're bringing together and all these other different scopes that they're working on, trying to make sure that they have centralization. What they're trying to do is, instead of having servers out at least every location, there's centralization, but they need to have role-based access control because they have different divisions. And in some cases, they're managing IT for some of the franchisees. So all these things that Microsoft was bringing into Windows Server 2016, they got preview look at it, thanks to Mahesh and Prasad, the product managers for this. And as a result, Thomas decided that they were going to deploy and move solely to a Microsoft platform. Now, I'm sure many of you here have, particularly if you're doing a lot of DDI, you have enterprise-level DDI. You might have some things mixed in with the bind of the Internet Systems Consortium stuff. And that obviously creates management headaches. It creates interoperability headaches. They wanted to make sure they got rid of those. So they reduced complexity. They were able to take the DNS servers and reduce the number, centralize them in the data center. They were able to take all that mixture of products, Microsoft, Linux, Cisco, and Infoblox, bring it into one thing, Microsoft. Single training base, single code base, single maintenance contract. They don't have to deal with five different vendors coming in every day and people trying to sell them stuff. And they were able to actually centralize the management of their IP addresses, which they weren't able to do before. And as they add additional things, the Microsoft centralized management platform, MOM and the things in Azure Cloud, make it easy. They're now able to go to non-forward deployment things in new stores. They don't have to roll an IT role as part of a store opening. They just have to get a connection. They have a future-proof, seamless deployment from the data center to the remote site, their own virtualization, and out into the cloud. Saved them a lot of money. Saved about 10 days' work for the team a month. Now think about that. You're getting back half the work days of your team a month. What could you do with that? And they don't have to deal with a third party.
Yep.
And by the way of enabling administrators to perform their tasks across everything, but with proper rollback access control, you don't have to deal with multiple levels of give me that password or having separate role-based passwords that you're changing. You actually have authentication down to who did what when and proper control based on the level of access. And by being able to do DNS management from IPAM, they've got a single console as opposed to, oh, wait, I got to switch this entirely different vendor. And is it which site is it? Are they using Cisco? Are they using open source? Are they using Infoblox? No, doesn't matter. I've got the role. I'm in where I need to be. I'm able to do what I got to do. And the customer story is up there. There's the URL. These presentations, by the way, I see people taking pictures. This is all going to be available on your MyIgnite afterwards. The presentations and I believe the audio track too.
That is true. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. Thanks, Tom. So that was all about the IPAM related investments, what we had done for the Windows Server 2016. Now we'll try to delve into some of the DNS side of investments in 2016. I'm going to keep it a little lightweight so that Thomas has a whole lot of scenarios which really empowers on top of those platform related work which he can showcase. So one of the main investment in DNS servers is the DNS policies. And this is a much ask from customers with regard to the traffic management, with the DNS policies. When you say traffic management, these are the application, traffic through the leveraging the DNS, scheme of things. And the way we have tried to address this with DNS policies is numerous scenarios which we are trying to tackle from a location-aware response, for the application servers, traffic, especially the accessing the application servers. Improve the availability of critical application with some, failover policies. Load balancing is crucial when you're trying to say that you have a distributed farm of applications, servers, and you're trying to leverage the DNS parameters for you to really load balance, the application, request that is coming from the endpoints from a different geo region or even from a specific region, and you want to really divert the traffic to the right application server so that the load and the experience of the application is held high. So that's something which is possible with the DNS policies. Time of day based policies is essential, I would say, when it comes to responding to certain situations where you want to scale out the load, the load of request to the application server, and at some point in time, when you're seeing the load is really not there, you would like to really scale back, right? So time of day based policies gives you that kind of a control, wherein you're able to govern this, and then also leverage, that kind of a configuration for all your maintenance, planned or unplanned maintenance cycle of some of those application servers. Split brain DNS and selective recursion. So this is a challenge where customers often have DNS naming convention, internal and external kind of overlapping with the same name. Typically happens in a hoster kind of a scenario where you have a customer requesting for some name which is pretty much in line with some of the internal domain names and stuff, and user has to really go and tackle this and redoing the DNS zones at that point in time is a huge task. And that's where when you have the DNS being aware about these kind of a duplicate name but then still honoring their isolations, and that's possible out of the DNS policy. So that's the split brain kind of a scenario. Query filters is when you're doing the DNS query, you want to have the right kind of a filters leading to the right application servers, and that can be governed using the DNS policies and stuff. So let's look at the anatomy of this policy, right? So the policy is basically having three component. One is the criteria, basically the condition, and that condition can be built on few set of entities like the client subnet, which is the client trying to access this particular application server, or the interface server interface IP, which is the application interface IP, and which seems to be the most prevalent one. FQDN, IPv4 and IPv6 address, transport protocol, UDP or TCP, time of day, which I just explained, query type, and we know that this is an area where we need to keep investing because there are newer dimensions that's really coming in the industry with regard to having control from an access point of view. It could be the geolocation based IP, umpteen of those kind of conditions. And this is what we have today in the 2016, and we constantly will keep looking forward for what needs to be supported. And we work very close with Azure. In fact, the same DNS server is hosted by the Azure for Azure DNS, and we know there are a lot of scenarios which is going to come our way for us to have things enabled out of this. So that way, we are fairly confident about the DNS server really meeting the needs of the traffic management, both for Azure kind of a scale network as well as for hoster network. So what are the actions that we can take on these conditions? We have allow, deny, ignore, pretty straightforward. Like any other condition-driven policy configuration. Action is, at this point in time, we have, because it's a traffic manager, we try to control the action from the ratio of, queries or processing that hits to the DNS server, right? And these are, ratio. For instance, you have an two application server and you would like to have one of the application prepped for a load of 2x times to another. Now, those are the kind of action that you can take with this particular policy. This is just to explain how all of the earlier policy is constructed with the current DNS elements. So we all had the zone. All of us are aware of the zone. And we have the resource records. So what is introduced new is the zone scopes. Right, the zone scopes is the one which is going to give a clear classification of those segmentation of traffic that we anticipate. And the segmentation can be, as I mentioned, based on the server IP or any other criteria which we just saw. And once that exists, this is kind of a prep slide for a demo which I'm going to walk through. So we have a DNS server deployed, and there is an application with contoso.com name. that is actually spread across, you know, multiple instances. There's Seattle and in Chicago, there are two instances of that particular application running, and Dublin and Amsterdam. And we also have clients, you know, of various of these particular region trying to access this particular application server, right? And the ideal experience would be that if those, you know, the endpoints are trying to access the application in the same geo region, then the response rate and the application end user experience of that particular application would be really good. And that's what we're trying to achieve with the DNS policies over here, right? So this is what happened. So Contessa.com is a zone. We have created zone scope, Seattle, Chicago, Dublin, and Amsterdam, depending on places where these application servers are running, and against the server interface IP address, right? So those are the IP addresses which is configured. And these all would be kind of a record in this instance of a DNS server there. So let's quickly look at the demo. I'll just carry forward this, you know, the demo snapshot, what you saw over here, into the live demo. All right. So this is a partial script, as I mentioned. So these are the, you know, different IP address record that has got created, as we saw over there, right, for the same application, contessa.com. And we have the, you know, two subnets created over here, you know, for the geo region in US and Europe, right? And we're going to create the zone scopes for the same application with a different purpose, and we'll show how the zones are going to be used when we're trying to create that particular DNS policies, right? These are the records, the A record that is getting created for those IP addresses, the server IP addresses, and the zone scope. So this is where things are getting stitched together. And this is a policy. So if you look at the policy construct over here, for all the, you know, anticipated application traffic in US region, we would like to allow for a client subnet coming out of the America subnet, which is this IP address, you know, range. And the zone scope associated with that is both the Seattle and Chicago, but then the ratio is 2 and 1. So wherein we expect, or we would want, the 2x times of the application traffic drive to the Seattle, and, you know, 1x of it going to the Chicago, right? And the processing order is, if you have such kind of a policies written, you know, for further, you know, navigation of your traffic, then one can actually order this particular policies to be playing on the server, right? So all of this configuration is happening on the DNS server, right? So let's just quickly try to run that. So this is a, you know, partial script. I've tried to have this configured. There you go. So now this is configured on the DNS server. What we have, just to walk you through, so let's look at, you know, a client's trying to access from America here, and what we are doing here is actually flushing the DNS client cache, and the browser also has some of the DNS caching, so which we need to flush out so that we only then we can see how the load balancing of this application is going to be in effect. In a true scenario, the way this would work is an application admin has configured or set this up, and once the DNS server, you know, is configured with this particular policy and has the policy in effect, and then the DNS, all the DNS clients gets also updated, you know, after a period of time as part of their sync with the DNS server, then this would work, you know, naturally. User doesn't have to really go and do anything specifically on that endpoint, but then since we are not really waiting for the time to happen a sync between the clients and the server, we are just trying to do a force, kind of a cleaning up the cache so that we can literally see how that 2:1 ratio should be working. So what we should expect over here is that when we are trying to refresh access to this particular application, we should see twice the access going to the Seattle application server and once going to the Chicago. So when I do a refresh, so this is the first time it's going to the Seattle, and subsequent time, again, I'm cleaning up the cache. So once again, it goes to the Seattle, and now hopefully it should go to Chicago. So yeah, so that's the load balancing that you're trying to achieve with regard to the accessing to the application server with DNS policies and purely getting managed out of the DNS zone scope parameters. So moving back to the slide. So there are several other investments that have that has made in the DNS server. One is around the DNS audit and analytical logs. So this is very crucial for something which you're planning to enable in OMS. There's going to be a DDI analytic service, which I'll walk through after Tom does some of the ThreatStop related investment. The whole idea is to DNS is an entity that has a lot of environment and application-centric information, and even the network traffic or the users' traffic-related information. Having an audit of that gives a lot of planning and optimizing opportunity with regard to configuring the DNS and others. So what we try to do here in audit and analytical logs is we try to keep a track of what has changed at zone, server, and the record level. We also keep a tab of who made the change, whether it's a data center admin or a tenant admin who has made the change, and when the change has been made. So all of this gets audited, and we really can have a good configuration change tracking built on the DNS server. Particularly, interesting feature for hosted business which is trying to leverage our product for any of those DNS properties. We have the DNS analytical logs, where we are trying to do some real-time query logs. This is all about the users trying to query the DNS server and keeping a track of the response rate and all the different activity that happens on the DNS server. We also have the minimal perf impact kind of the logging is not very intrusive, or it's not very exhaustive onto the DNS server. There's a lot of diagnostics features which can be enabled over here. Like, for example, you get a clear sense of failure reasons and the frequency at which the failure happens on the DNS server. Now, of course, the query trends, which is very insightful, which kind of gives you a kind of a dimension for you to go and have the right kind of a zone scope and policies created for any of the properties that is getting accessed. Performance. This has been a significant area we have made some improvement. We have a 250K query per second improvement. It's one of the top performing servers in the industry from a DNS point of view. Zone loading performance, this is another area which we have made a lot of investments from in an engineering point of view, where we have 45,000 zones which gets loaded in 14 seconds against previously 12 minutes, right? And all of this is leveraged by our Azure service as well. All right, so response rate limiting. So this is something what we've heard customers asking for, especially hosting kind of a scenario. And it didn't be totally hosting. It could occur even in internal. And it's basically when you have some of the botnet kind of entities which is trying to really tax the DNS servers with a lot of queries, and how do we control that? And that's something, there is an IETF, I guess it's draft, not a standard. So with a response rate limiting capability. So this is something which we have introduced in 2016 to govern those requirement. And thereby, the DNS service is really not, is equipped now or is able to guard the network to which this, the queries otherwise would be leading to. Some of the quick summary, as I mentioned, investment in DNS policies, response rate limiting, support for DANE, which is a new RFC, unknown record support is there, IPv6 root hints is something which we have introduced this time around. So that's a snapshot of DNS in Windows Server 2016. Now I would leave it to Tom to take him through the ThreatStop. And in the last, I'll try to give you a little bit of a perspective on what we are trying to do in the OMS DDI analytics.
Thanks, Mahesh. So as I said, some of you may already be customers. We've got 1,200 plus worldwide. We're probably one of the most successful startups you've never heard of. We're here to change that. What we came up with, invented in my garage, was the idea of using DNS to propagate network policy out to arbitrary endpoint devices. So firewalls, routers, switches, DNS servers, and enforcing that wherever it is. When we saw Microsoft come up with these DNS policies, the same thing went through our heads that kind of went through my head when we started the business. And that was, let's take what exists already and use it in ways the designers may not have intended but is already in the system. So we had done that with response policy zones in Bind, which is anything that runs Bind can run a threat-stop DNS firewall policy now. And then Microsoft came out with this integrated solution in what is the most widely deployed name server in businesses the world over. And we're like, that's the answer. We're going to work on that. And so from the time that we heard about it last June to now, we have now delivered Azure DNS Firewall, Azure Stack, and you're seeing right now Windows Server 2016. So what does our company do? Well, we have the patents on disseminating network policy. We have partnerships. If you go to our website, we work on Juniper, we work on Cisco, we work on Fortinet. You go through the list of every firewall you probably have, we work there. We work on over 90% of the world's deployed DNS servers. As I said, Bind, Windows Server 2016, PowerDNS. The integration with Server 2016 is very tight. And we have a partnership with Microsoft, obviously. My background, US Army, one of the original networking guys. Back to digitizing the dirt, and it's actually my friendship with Mark Sox that got me into this whole security lark. I consider myself a hacker, but in the good sense. Understand the system, understand what it can do, and perhaps use it in ways the designers didn't intend. But more importantly, a military mindset makes you very good at security, not because you're good at security, but because you have to learn to think like your opponent without becoming them. I've been very lucky to assemble a very strong team around me. Some of them are here, including Jonathan Book, who wrote the code for Windows Server 2016, and Joe Dahlquist, who's the product manager that drove the spec. Thank you very much, guys. You may have seen some of them on our booth. I'm also very honored to have working with me Paul Makapetris, the guy who invented the DNS, who gave me one of the original people to encourage me to run this company. And last but by no means least, after finally getting traction and proving people we weren't insane, the original investors in Google, Andy Bechtelsheim and David Cheriton. Andy's one of the co-founders of Sun Microsystems, and David Cheriton with Sergey Brin and Larry Page's faculty advisor at Stanford, are outside investors. So what is a DNS firewall? What it is about taking your policy, and we also provide a threat intelligence platform with over 185 different categories from about 50 canonical sources of data, and applying it to your devices using DNS. A DNS firewall looks at the queries being made by your users and applies intelligence to them to either block or allow based on what you chose as a policy. There's a big difference between a data feed and a firewall. In a firewall, you have context. You have the ability to make a policy decision. You can pick elements and pick rules. And more importantly, it also then tells you what it did. So we have leveraged the components that were put together in Windows Server 2016 combined with a web service to create an actual firewall using that DNS server. DNS security server policies can be used to apply rules based on what you select. The analytic log can then be fed back into a platform that will allow you to look at what happened and why and drill down on context. Now, we have use cases. The one we were showcasing on the show floor here, Operation Smile. They were originally one of our firewall customers on-prem. They now use us for DNS firewall in Azure. Global entity, 60 countries. They do surgeries on children. They have data sovereignty laws they got to deal with, medical records, HIPAA compliance, whatever. And they use it, nothing but net, no need to have multiple different vendors. Obviously, higher education, where you have to let people do whatever they can, but still protect your network. And obviously, critical infrastructure. We have pipelines and power companies as customers. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you really quickly how this works. I've got 10 minutes, so if we want to do something more detailed, we can do that later, and then you can get a chance to see how it works. All right. Give me a second to get this unlocked. Okay, just, you know, there are no tricks here. This is a really simple VMware setup. What I've got is I've got a Viata router. It's just a virtual router that's a NAT box. I'm trying to do a really good simple simulation. Windows Server is the DNS server for this subnet. It's handed out by DHCP by the Viata. And if we have time, we can actually go look at, you know, Mr. Insecure Windows 7 here. Now he's protected. But the most important thing is, what are you going to do to get this working? Well, the first thing you do is you log into the ThreatStop portal, which we're going to log in as me. So and it's 2FA because, well, it's a security service. So I'm using Google Authenticator, but any of your typical 2FAs will work. This is my UI. Obviously, a bunch of lab stuff in here. A whole bunch of different types of firewalls that will work. But what we're looking at today is DNS firewall. I did take the liberty of not wasting your time to actually have configured a test device here. So the first thing you're going to do typically when you log into ThreatStop is you're actually going to configure your policy. Okay, when you think about it, you got to have a policy before you apply it to a firewall. And I created one already for MS Ignite, just to save a bit of time here. This is the, we have both standard and expert mode. In standard mode, we aggregate things into buckets based on priority or types of things. And then we curate it for you. In expert mode, you get raw access to the direct targets that we've created. You can choose actions based on the type. Here I've basically got a policy that takes everything the US cert says. We're blocking botnet C2Cs. Minimal geographic, but you know, you don't want to talk to North Korea. You don't want to talk to Cuba and Iran. These guys, if you're a US entity, doing business with them is still sanctioned in most cases. And you probably don't want your users going through anonymous proxies. And you probably don't want them using DNS to tunnel data out of your network either. Using DNS as a VPN tunnel is a very common tactic of botnet and criminal operators. And you can see over here what you do. Okay, that's the policy. So then, you want to apply a policy to a device. So in this case, I created a Ignite demo device, but this is how you do it. You just give it a name. You choose a manufacturer. In the case of Windows Server 2016, it's going to be Microsoft. You can see we support a whole bunch of others as well. And in Microsoft's case, we have three policies that are, three devices that are supported, right? So you have Azure DNS Firewall, Azure IP Firewall, or your Windows Server 2016 DNS policies. Now, we lock these things down based on your public IP for Windows Server. We do also have the ability to do dynamic IPs, and we will be rolling out API-based access in the next month. You pick a policy that goes to it. Unless you're one of our MSSP guys, you won't actually see this. We can actually do this in passive mode from these analytic logs and tell you what we would have blocked if you don't want to do that. When you configure the device, you can then get instructions on how to use it. All of our instructions, by the way, are available publicly at dochub.threatstop.com if you want to see what you'd have to go through to actually do it, that's available. We try to make it really easy for people to do the installation so you can download it. I like to save it as, and there's a reason for that, because it's actually a PowerShell script, PS1. I don't care. All right, view downloads, and there it is. So the way you do this is you just open it in PowerShell, Okay, this needs to be when you're doing the configuration, this needs to be administrative version, okay? Because this is, by the way, this is RTM. They did say run the whole thing, the latest version, so here we go. And what it does is it just downloads the basic information that you need, and then it runs an automatic. So we're locking it to your public IP address, which I'd already gone and got my, what is my IP here? Right, and that tells it which policy to go get. There we go. It has just downloaded this policy that I showed you, okay? That policy, and the instructions are all here so you can read through and understand it. Just trying to be economic in time here. But that policy that we configured, how many elements does it have right now? It has 40,315 elements. So you just created a 40,315 rule firewall just now on your DNS server. And to prove that that works, what you want to do is you want to look at the utilities. And we make this easy for you. There's a directory on your C drive now called ThreatStop. There's a utilities directory, and if you want to see what your ThreatStop policy blocks are, how many policies we created for you, just run that. 31. And if you want to look at the contents of those policies, just run that. Now, obviously, this is FCS, right? So there's going to be a whole bunch of extra work done here. But you can see I said I wanted to do anonymization, so Hushmail's in there. But there's a whole bunch of your usual stuff where people are trying to typo squat. Let's find one that's always interesting. Bitdefender distributor. Could that possibly be fake AV? Would you want your users to go there? Probably not. So just to prove that, you know, we're doing the right thing here. I won't even do it as an admin. Don't need to. Localhost. As you can see, it's right there. Let's do this. Nothing to see here. Move along now. That is in the analytic log. So if you go to Applications and Services, Microsoft. Sorry, Windows logs. Where'd it go?
Windows.
Oh, there it is, Windows.
Sorry. Windows, yeah.
I just saw that it enabled a whole bunch of extra ones. RTM has a whole bunch of interesting new stuff. There it is, DNS server. Yeah. Analytical. All right. Audit, sorry. Can you see the policy operations here? Say again?
It's in the audit.
Audit. I'm in the audit log.
Analytical.
Okay. I didn't see the error.
Yeah.
It's down here. That's why I had to scroll down. So there's the error. This is where it was blocked. Yeah. You can see here that element. Now we upload. This is not what you want to be dealing with when you're, you know, when you're working. So, and I'm going to switch to a real customer that's using the product. They do allow us to show their logs. These guys are a healthcare company. They do hearing aids for people. And they have little hearing aid stores all throughout the Asia Pacific. And they have been testing our products for 3 months now. This is live data, but they're very helpful in having us tested it. We give you a graphical drill down. Now remember, so see all that textual information, you can't really take action on that. but you sure as hell can if you've got something nice like this, especially if I want to find my severity fives. So you can see MSISAC, that's the US cert, says don't talk to these, but those are ransomware droppers that were blocked. And you can see the DNS name that was queried was blocked at the IP level because it's a ransomware C2C. We give you your passive DNS, all the historical data that we have on it. Network connection out of here is a little bit slow, unfortunately. So this is real, right? So it takes a second or two for things to come down from the big bad internet with everybody using it at once. Is one of the firewalls here blocking my check IOCs? It worked yesterday. All right. Anyway, you can get drilled down. We give you passive DNS data, and we can show you a live demo if you ever want to look at it again. And that's pretty much it. If you have any questions, ask later. Sure. Oh. Thank you. I think Mahesh has got a little bit more, and then we can have to take questions afterwards.
Right. All right, just trying to quickly cover the DDI analytics and OMS. This is a service which is in private preview at this point in time. If anybody is interested, share with me the your workspace, OMS workspace. We can get a subscription to it, and you know, you could have tried this particular feature. So the intent here is to start with a cloud-based network service, and especially for properties like DNS and DHCP. And as you can see, from a DNS point of view, there are a bunch of intent which we have to do. I mean, so this is, the whole idea is give some insights with regard to the statistical insights with regard to queries, resource record, zone configuration, configuration changes, so that you can have a better control on the DNS servers that you manage. At this point in time, the solution is focusing on DNS. There is a plan for it to also focus on the DHCP features, which we'll bring in later. So the top set of features are like, you know, querying for the internal external domain names, DNS update statistics, configuration change audit, as I mentioned, query load, and identify chatty clients, right? Report of malware and infected devices and stuff. So some, you know, perspective on the experience, I just taken screenshots over here so that I can drive through the point. So this is the DDI analytics view, where you get to see the domains queried per day, internal queries and external queries. As you keep progressing, you can get a sense of the DNS clients, the threshold that they're trying to, from a query point of view, the dynamic DNS registrations, the IP address, and point in time where things have really spiked. Name registration request, again, in giving you a trend perspective. Some of the common queries which, from a DNS reporting point of view, which you would like to have for you to go and configure the DNS can be, seen here. When you look at the list of DNS servers, then it gives you complete inventory of the DNS server, number of zones that is hosted, the zone scope that is hosted on it. The zone inventory gives you, you know, who's owning, what is the kind of a zone, whether it is secure or unsecure, or the name servers associated to that, hosting that particular zone, zone type, various different aspects. The whole idea is to give some of those insights and statistical context, you know, for your DNS server farm, which you're trying to own, either in the hoster or even for your, enterprise, and get a sense of, having some kind of a configuration or tuning to those resources. Yeah, so that's all what we had. Thanks a lot for making it the last day, the first hour of the session. Appreciate your attendance, and if you have any queries, we'll be here to take. I'll share my colleague's contact as well, who's focusing on this area a whole lot. So if, you know, we can follow back with you know, some of the details that we're looking forward for. Thank you. Have a great day.
I'll stick around for questions if anybody has any.
So. Yep. So, great question. So, we have it in our you know, backlog. At this point in time, there's a script-based approach, and the script is something which we have published in Script Center. So, you know, things can synchronize with the sites and with the subnets that has been learned, you know, by the IPAM with the Active Directory sites and subnets. Yeah, but eventually we'll get there. We'll have the challenge that what we foresee there is. Some of the customers consider active sites and Active Directory sites and subnets to be the authoritative entity when it comes to the subnets, but there are a lot of customers who do not. They still look forward for their IP address management tools like us or Infoblox or Bluecat, what, and that's their authoritative entity for the subnet and stuff. And so we need to, you know, have a kind of an approach which works on both those philosophical thoughts, and that's the reason why we're still, you know, planning on it. Yeah. Yes. You're referring to the DNS policies? Load balancing, yeah. So that's not really based on this active, passive, you know, it's not the high availability kind of a story. This is more of load balancing, wherein you're trying to say that, hey, if we believe that instance of an application which is running, that machine is capable to handle a lot better load in comparison to another machine hosting an that particular application, then we kind of put that ratio 2x versus 1x and stuff. Yeah, so then the traffic would, you know, right. That is right. But that's not a capability of the DNS policies there. That would be the applications clusters, you know, behavior that would take care of that. Yeah. Yeah, fair. The query count, you know. Yeah, yeah, but then that imposes, the queries impose a certain kind of a load on the DNS server, and that is what has been trying to get managed over here. Yeah.
So once you created a subnet using IPAM and reserved a particular IP address or a range of IPs, sometimes, you know, in the real world environment, server gets decommissioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there something you guys are thinking that kind of a reassignment so that somebody can look, okay, this IP address was assigned to this port on that particular server now?
Yeah.
It is retired and it is now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We do have capabilities around those wherein we keep a track of this IP address's life cycle. And, but it's not in a very, you know, self-learned and automated manner. So if that automation exists outside, wherein, you know, we have exposed those partial command lines through which when there's a decommissioning that happens and you're releasing an IP and this IP address gets released, but then the old record still would remain for you to audit and stuff. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that, yeah, that exists today. And when your new allocation, at that point in time, the different metadata would take care of, you know, continuing to have that particular IP. IP address is deleted, but then the historical information that remains for the audit purposes.
So another question regarding the DNS, probably I think Microsoft is missing long time now. When you're creating a simple record from the DNS blockchain, like Eric,
yeah.
What you have is just a path name and IP address.
Yeah.
Probably sometimes you know, depends on the business environment. You need to have some more information like what kind of a description.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this capability offers that. So wherein you can, apart from having a very DNS-centric information, you know, which is essential for that particular resource record to be configured on the DNS server. No. This is on the IPAM. Oh yeah. So there is no improvement on the DNS MMC. Yeah. Not really. I don't think so. We would be forcing it. Our guidelines would be that, you know, there's a lot of benefit to use IPAM in those workflows for multiple reasons. One, it gives you a lot more, parameters using which you can, and a lot more insight when you're trying to make that kind of a configuration. Second, all the configuration that you're trying to do gets audited in the IPAM. Third, if there is a need for any multi-management kind of a capability or having link up to another, you know, resource entry and stuff that's possible out of the IPAM and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Good point. Yeah. So we don't have one today, but if we feel that the market is, you know, this is a capability which we just got released in 2016, and we want to really see whether all that what you know customers were trying to do with the DNS MMMC are getting accomplished here. And if we hear that feedback coming loud and clear, then probably by the next release or something, we'll try to have that kind of a capability. But that's a great feedback, so that at least that way you would be guarding the DNS servers getting control out of the MMC, and then you have IPAM to be a centralized entity for you to. Yeah, that is right. That is right. Yeah.
Like DMZ records aren't necessarily in the regular DNS. If we use IPAM, it's got to work for everything.
Yeah.
So stuff in the DMZ might not be registering in our DNS. We have a separate domain out there, which we're not going to do a trust between that domain and
the
internal. So what do you do about stuff like that?
Right. So at this point in time, we don't support of an automated way of supporting, those record registration. But then, if the scenario is about having an inventory and trying to tackle the usage, then that's what we have. But then we understand that there has to be a lot more, contextual about hey, that's a kind of a non-trusted Active Directory domain, obviously for a right purpose over there for the DMZ reasons. And that doesn't exist today. Yeah.
So we gotta track that on a separate spreadsheet.
Or you can have that spreadsheet imported. You could still track it out of IPAM, but then there has to be a sync between that spreadsheet that you're tracking and the imports that you're doing in the IPAM.
Okay. And same thing with any network devices. We need to put them in DNS
manually. Yes. That is right. That is right. Yeah.
What does it do for conflicting address space? We have a lot of acquisitions that have a lot of, and they repeat the 10 address space all over the place.
Yeah.
IPAM
actually tackles that particular problem. So it gives you a clear sense of which are the IP addresses that is with running into duplicate kind of a scenario. It'll give you that indication, and it'll also give you the indication of which IP address block it is belonging to, and stuff. So those which are mapped, so that's the term that we use, mapped IP address. So that would be the one which would prevail in the UI. That doesn't mean that the other records are being culled. You can do an audit and then decide on whether which of those IP addresses you would like to really have it mapped or have them culled out of the system and stuff.
But if we need them to have them mapped, because in some cases we have a company that we acquired that we can't re-IP up, them, and they're all 10 address spaces.
Right.
So we would like to be able to manage them from a central console,
but
knowing that they're in company A and they have all this IP address versus company B, which has similar IP addresses.
That's right. So that's where we have something known as an address space as a kind of a concept, where you can create different address space for each of those scenarios. So the IP address get mapped to the IP address block without conflicting with the the same IP address block in another address space.
Okay, and then you'll still be able to put server X in this address space and server Y in this address space, and
yeah.
still be able to be pushed out.
That is right. Yeah.